This is Raphonix After Hours.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 28. We have the regular crowd. It's me, Ben, we have Telmo, and we have Pete joining us today. Our weekly roundup, as we always begin with. My little something for today is a sad one. I lost my favourite pen. So, ages ago, a friend's dad just gave me a Fisher Space pen. I don't really know why, he just did, and it was amazing. So, it has that cartridge in it that can write upside down on oil and all these useless things that you will never need in your entire life. But the amazing thing about the Fisher Space pen is you start writing and it always works. There's no scribbling to get the pen to start. So
it's quality, friends. It's quality.
It was amazing, but I lost mine. It's so sad. So I've had to invest in another one. But I did get the excuse to buy brass this time. So it's just raw brass. So it's going to age and patina really nicely with the horrible gunk from my hands and the scratches of the keys in my pocket. So I'm excited to see how that one looks. Also, got a V60. Now, for the coffee people among you, that's a filter brewer, a little ceramic thing made by Hario, a Japanese company, and that's a change for me from the Chemex world for filter coffee. It draws down a lot quicker, so there has been quite a change in the flavour of my coffees, but that's quite exciting for me, so I'm enjoying using my little carafe to dispense my coffee and serve it. It's been lovely.
Oh, that's amazing.
Hello. What have you been up to?
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it last week. I've also been very busy.
How dare you leave us on our own.
I'm moving. So I've got this... I've had a really interesting experience this week with remote producing / mixing / creative sessions with one of my mates, Phil. So we've been using Audio Movers. We've been trading stuff back and forth. It's a program that I think we've mentioned about a month ago or so in one of our episodes.
Yeah, good while. Remind us what it does, how it works, because I have absolutely no idea anymore.
Yeah, so Audio Movers, it's a program, or let's say a plugin, that allows you to record and to hear in with no latency whatsoever what the other person is listening in.
I don't believe there's no latency whatsoever. That's not possible.
Well, it is with Audio Movers for a simple fee of £10.99. Sorry, £10?
£10.99.
That's great.
That's just 20 quid, basically, isn't it?
Yeah. For a simple fee of $10 you can per month, you can totally get latency-free sharing with your mate. It could be on the other side of the world, and that totally works. So I've been doing that. We've been producing. We've been doing a lot of PGIP stuff. He's been adding some really cool synths. We've been working on harmonically what we can do for the song, and it's been sounding great. I'm really happy with the plugin itself. How it works. Honestly, the quality is insane. I totally recommend someone just give it a 7-day free trial if you can. Audio Movers is definitely the plugin to look for collaborations, even if lockdown gets eased all over the world. It's something to look forward to. So, yeah, that's been most of my news, moving and producing. How about you, Pete?
Well, I've actually, for once, been getting into the studio and noodling away. So it's...
Was that with the new Vimona bit that you picked up recently?
Yes, and the Mimeophone and various other bits and pieces. So that's good. I'm still on my quest to fix my Hex Mix, which is still problematic, unfortunately. But I did get a response from Bafaco on it, which is quite good. So
can you remind us what happened to it, Pete?
Well, I built the Hex Mix kit. Ben had advised me on the product initially. I was looking for performance mixer for modular. And Ben had built it himself and had great success with that. And
although now we've kind of gone through the various pitfalls, I think I managed to get a working one with incredible luck. to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, whereas Ben sort of had an intense sort of one-day build and completed it on the same day, same calendar day anyway.
Technically
did
speaking.
Did you go past midnight and go into the next?
No, I think it was actually over into the early hours
early
of the
hours
next day.
Of the morning. So, yes, whereas I tested all the components as best you can, there's obviously some components are not as easy to test, and I spent somewhere in, if you add up all the time, I spent about a week carefully constructing it, and I still had a problem with one of the channels, channel 3, where you get very little audio, and then you've got the indicator LED on that channel glows red all the time. So I've sort of got all the schematics, and I've really dove deep into it, and I was talking about this last week, and I had written to Bifeco, and they hadn't responded by the time I got to talk about it on the podcast. But subsequently they have, and they sent me suggestions of what part of the circuitry they feel the problem might be, and even little sort of tiny little schematic of the op amp, and telling me to sort of test this and test that.
That's why okay. we like modular people, because they're just yes. generous with their experience and knowledge.
Very responsive, and I really appreciate it,
the
input from them. But the one problem being, they sort of suggest that you test for various voltages getting onto the op amps on various legs, but I haven't really thought about how you can actually do that because of the way the two circuit boards assemble. I'm not sure how I can probe the board whilst testing for voltages while having it powered up, which could be interesting.
You might have to have it somehow powered up, but get some horrible ribbon contraption and have the two bits separate, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly what Ooh. I was thinking of, having sort of ribbon cables and having the whole thing all Ooh. Splayed out onto
well,
the bench.
Because the two yeah. PCBs are connected with those little headery bits with the legs yes. and the sockets, aren't they?
Yes.
I think Thonk sell a big old like 16-point ribbon cable terminated in those little pointy ends, kind of like breadboard connectors. You might be able to do something with those.
Well, I'll have a look. Well, I think, is it... No, it's tomorrow because Thonk went offline again
yep,
in respect to sales.
It should be open tomorrow, yeah.
So I'm not sure if that... I think on the statement they said it was something to do with their move still or something they're
yeah,
still
premises.
Preparing. Or there may be a certain amount of... maybe they're overwhelmed as well. There most probably was quite a lot of pent-up demand for kits. So maybe the combination of needing to sort of prepare their new premises a bit more and deal with the orders. Because they said they were shipping orders, but they weren't taking any fresh orders. So... That should I have? There was a countdown clock, so I haven't checked it, but I think it's tomorrow anyway. So I'm around or at home, so I may or I most probably will make some purchases. I was going to get some of those the little threaded thumb sort of things that go round 3.5 mil sockets.
What Nerlies?
Yes, and they do them in various colours.
There are my Nerlies. Oh no, the. Banana nuts, I think is what
yes.
they call them.
Yeah, so they're really cool. I notice on the retail hex mix, the output on the master bus, they're red, and then on the inputs on all the channels, they're black. And I thought, oh.
Yeah, so on all their stuff on Modular Grid, they've updated the pictures to have the kind of matching colour scheme banana nuts. I have seen some people who've gone at vast expense and colour-coded, sort of, you know, audio input, audio output, CV in, CV out, all these kind of things with all the banana, so they can kind of navigate a bit better. And somebody did it to Make Noise Maths, the silver one, and they had like yellow and green on there, and it looked even worse than Maths does normally. It was horrifying. So I think a subtle hand is required when picking your colours. For those.
Yeah, I was going for the black and the red as they have done with the hex mix. Seems to suit the sort of
standard.
Thing. So
I love it.
And then there's also a little torque kind of spannery thing to suit. So I was going to grab one of those as well.
Yeah, but sounds good.
That's pretty much it. Apart from my failing dentistry, I'm having a sort of dental crisis, and I'm going to have the joy of engaging with a dentist under the new.
That's going to be weird.
Yes. So,
it's like you're touring all the various like medical professionals to see what they're like now. We've had the chiropractor episode.
Yeah.
Now it'll be dentist. Then you've been to the GP as well.
Three times to the GP.
We should have a little subsection of Pete goes to the doctor.
Yeah, it's just at my age, I'm just falling apart. No, my dentistry was collapsing on one side. I'm not suffering. I've got there's no pain or discomfort, but it has to be remedied. So it was more the cost because I was... the dentist practice that I'm with, you can actually peruse the sort of menu of costs of various things. And I was going down
the menu.
There was the NHS cost, and then there was the private cost next to it. And unfortunately, for some reason, I'm on my children are on the NHS list, but I'm on the private list. It's a historical thing. So
for those who can't see how Pete looks like, he's definitely in his mid-20s, looking wise. You know, don't take him for an old man, everybody.
Yeah, so it was basically, it was not so much the engaging the strange scenario, because I'm sure they're going to have the full PPE, because that is really intrusive. You couldn't think of anything more intrusive than someone sort of performing dental surgery on you, especially in these sorts of times. But I'm from my experience of the chiropractor, I'm sure the dentistry is going to be even more extreme. They're going to be, I'm surprised they're not wearing hazmat suits. Yeah,
imagine whenever a dentist kind of reaching in, all that's going through their head is right into the danger zone. They're like doing their dentistry and that's just going through their head and they can't escape.
Well, some dentists like playing music, don't they? There's some sort of have stuff in the background.
Yeah. And then they put a screw in your tongue. Yeah. Because they're distracted with a guitar solo.
But it was, as I said, it was mainly the cost. I was looking down the list and thinking, oh, good, if I need that, oh, wow, that's going to be expensive. But, you know, you have to do these things. I mean, I don't mind investing as long as it holds out. I just don't want to invest heavily and then it all disintegrates. But there you go. That's my week.
We have nothing against dentists, guys. Come on.
Next week on Rec Addicts After Hours, we peruse our favourite dental procedures. None of them, please.
So are you guys okay with dentists? You're not dental phobic? I mean, I was when I was
Well, I mean, no one likes them.
I'm all right.
No, I've got a bit sort of, not blasé with it, but I don't have, I had, I certainly years ago, I was terrified by them, but that was born out of my experiences of dentistry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In previous decades,
ones that do all the talk, because obviously your mouth open already, so you can't really
you can't really say much apart from.
That's a bold statement there in the dentist.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much my week.
Yeah, just as long as you don't say and then you insult their entire family. It's the same kind of thing as getting a haircut and having no idea what to say, but thankfully you're safe with a dentist. Let's jump into our topics. Quite a sizable and chunky synthesizer has surfaced. I think the webpage is still 404 kind of thing on the Waldorf website potentially, because I think it got leaked somehow, as these always do. It's basically a desktop Quantum from Waldorf, but they've called it the Iridium.
And beware, it's not the Strymon pedal. That it's also called the Iridium. Don't be fooled by that. I just want to make sure I'll say that.
So have you guys had a chance to listen to those two YouTube videos so far from Waldorf? And one is just a brief introduction to the product, and then the second video is just audio, sort of a range of these sort of patches.
No, I didn't even know there were videos out yet, so I have to have a gander. Is there any major difference from the Quantum?
Well, it's basically the same architecture, but there is a subtle difference in its capabilities. It isn't quite as capable as the Quantum, and I believe they've taken away the sort of Quantum has a certain amount of kind of analog-ish kind of filtering quality, and that's not there at all. They've made this is very much digital, and they've emphasized the digital kind of patches, but it's substantially cheaper than buying the full keyboard.
Yeah, instead of $3,500, we're looking at $2,000, just short of. I've always said it's probably the closest you can get visually to having Serum in a hardware box. So one of my colleagues who's a big Serum user was looking at it going, ooh, that waveform view is a little familiar. But no, I think Quantum's cool.
Yeah, I've got a question. Is the screen the same size? Because I don't know, but it looks bigger on the Iridium. Is it just me?
Probably because the controls are condensed. I think it's probably going to be just the same one. It's a really nice touchscreen, actually. Quantum's always been... Well, it's got a lot of depth, it's quite easy to use and navigate, unlike the Kyra, which is the worst synthesizer ever designed and produced. it's quite a friendly one.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, but it's also quite expensive. So I'm wondering if the price will possibly come down over. It's not the sort of thing I'm going to rush out for. While I was at work over the last couple of days, I did notice that we've got quite a few pre-orders for these. So people are there's definitely demand, and I don't know when we're going to see these end of August.
Actually, I sold one to one of my regulars because he'd sent an email in basically as soon as he'd seen the leak. Went, "You're going to get them?" So I made sure to call him as soon as we had the info. But they'll actually be going out to the first three customers on the 28th of June. So it's a lot quicker than we'd ever expected from a new Waldorf release.
Yeah.
I did watch not all of it because it was quite a lengthy video, but I did watch a video from I think it was a German channel, but they were speaking in English, a YouTube channel. And it was a long discussion with one of the developers because it is a collaboration. Mm. So there are other outside parties that are not directly Waldorf that have been involved in the both products, the...
I know they had some Quantum big guns in on the sound design for the Quantum. So on the presets, it'll have a sound designer name in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's relatively standard with a lot of synths. They don't always sort of name them. But, a lot of manufacturers put their products out at the early stage when they've got prototypes and get various famous or renowned sort of sound designers to sort of produce stuff for them. Mm. I suppose when you've got a big screen, you can plaster all sorts of information into each patch so you can credit it. I always wondered where that stands on utilizing any of the patches in your own productions, because, you know, in theory, I mean, is there any royalty kind of response?
I suppose it'd be too much of a kettle of fish to unravel, really, if there was some kind of system for royalties in that sense.
I don't know. I think in terms of presets, that there mustn't be there must be just some sort of fee paid. I don't think that, you know, you working with a product really gets you any royalties, does it?
You just get paid to do the sound design. That's probably it.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there is clearly points in time when keyboards have come out, or synthesizers, or other products have come out, and then you hear them, the patches exactly without any kind of alteration in various sort of charting tracks, and you just exactly know which instrument it came from.
Like Fantasia, for example.
Yep.
Yeah. They've used the so and so. That's the sound from.
Yeah. Yeah, well, since presets got launched to the world with the product, I mean, it's just one of those things that's a bit of an inevitable, I suppose, especially if it's an FM synth where you can have all of these, if you can blend these kind of different elements into the one sound.
I suppose some of the widest ranging or furthest reaching preset, rather, might be some of the electric pianos from the DX7, since they were all over the 80s power ballads and things. Some of the more recognisable ones.
Mm, that teeny, really nice and rich top end that they have. It's very
I'm a big fan. Big fan. I know some people hate them, but I enjoy them. We've also got new release in terms of firmware this week. So Electron have given out updates to the DigiTact and DigiTone, a couple of OS upgrades, lots and lots of features. So if you really want to dig into it, there'll of course be the change log. I haven't updated mine yet. Have you done yours, Pete?
I haven't, and I was contemplating. I will do it, and I'll do it very shortly. But I'm at that stage where I'm not losing faith in the DigiTact, but I'm just wondering if it's possibly not the device for my particular sort of doorless setup.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I saw, they go, added new trig probability parameter. I'm like, that's already there. Why is that in the changelog? You can do probability stuff anyway.
Maybe they changed it.
They didn't say it was trig probability. They said it was a trig probability parameter. So it's another facet of that feature that was already present.
Yeah.
Oh, who knows? I have to dig through it. I think what's quite good is if you actually dig through a release kind of note, sometimes if you're playing with a new new feature of a product, especially when it's something heavily digital where they can really fundamentally change how the device works. Sometimes working through it like that can give you some ideas, generate new tracks as you're fiddling with it.
Yes, yep. Quite so. So I'm at this inflection point. I think that's the right way of describing it, where I'm going to most probably get my hands on a Akai One and also the 1010 Black Box and sort of have the three and see which one is the champion out, which one's the one that's going to work for my setup.
Yeah, I mean, the Black Box is minuscule because, I mean, the Digitech's not a large device. One's a little bit bigger, but Black Box is a tiny little thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have them simultaneously. I'm not going to sort of jettison the Digitech and then sort of get something else in and then go, oh, I should have kept the Digitech. I'm going to get to a position and have all three to hand, and then I'll retain the ones that
the
are...
The victor.
Well, the Digitech is wonderful and sounding, and it's a great instrument, but it's the lack of song mode is one of the killers for me, and the sort of MIDI is somewhat difficult. It's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit cranky. I mean, if I want something a bit more, something that's got a bit more structure, a piano roll, which potentially you're going to get in the Akai One, and I haven't really experienced the Black Box, so I can't really comment till I get one, but I've had so many phenomenal recommendations about it. And it's been designed as a product that would be ever expanded and upgraded and changed and added to, you know, in the respect to the OS and firmware.
Yeah,
and so forth.
I mean, there was a firmware release maybe a couple of months back, which really added to, like, I think some looping functionality in there and did drastically improve it. Not that it wasn't good already.
I was serving a customer quite some months ago, because it's quite a long time.
Long time since we've seen them.
Real customers in the flesh. And he actually had one in his bag with him, and he was really extolling it because I got to sort of chat about the Akai.
Do you get to see it? I've never seen one in person.
Yeah, he brought it out and literally sat in his palm of his hand. I mean, they are tiny. I mean, if you think about it, it's pretty much the size of a Eurorack module.
Oh wow, yeah.
Except it's standalone. So I think it's a similar.
It's roughly square, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a similar to the BitBox sort of. If you think about how many HP, I don't know how many HP the BitBox is. I'm going to guess 18 as just a throwaway number, possibly.
24, that's my guess. Who knows? Somebody can fact-check us.
Yes. So, but basically, it's like a lot of Eurorack, even though it's not Eurorack, it's a desktop, but it's one of these things. It's a lot smaller in the flesh than you perceive it, because... I don't know. It's, you know what they say about television puts on so many pounds.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I think it does it to video, does it to hardware as well. You look at it, you go, oh, it's this size, and you get it, oh, it's so tiny. It's much smaller than I thought it was going to be.
Will there be a plus for your dollar setup though? The fact that it's small.
No, well, it will make more room on the pedal board. Yes, maybe I'll be able to fill it. But I was thinking, it's always the way when I do these sort of things. You get it all together, and I spent quite a long time building, and everything's velcroed down heavily, and all the cable tying, and then the joy is, oh, I want to redesign it and change it. It's like things like that are always a work in progress. You're always looking for the most optimal, most functional. I mean, it's a similar sort of mythology to Eurorack, isn't it? You're chopping and changing and. Trying to get, and my limitation on that particular thing is the pedal. Although it's quite a large pedal board, it's still limited. I mean, it's amazing once you try to fit all the cabling in, all the connectors, how much space is lost in that respect.
Of course, yeah.
And there's only, I mean,
by the way, talking about connectors, you might want to try the new EBS connectors that they released. The little patch cables.
Okay.
They've released an oxygen-free ones. They're really nice and really cool.
Are they
really
the people that do those nice flat ones?
Yeah, yeah. They're the same ones. They're exactly the same design, but they have even better electrical current. So it's more pure, the fact that it's oxygen-free.
Better conductivity.
Conductivity. Boy, words today, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pardon me.
Oh no, we're all slowly dying.
it's the weird sort of, we've gone into that weird humid kind of typical English summer where it's not sunny but it's warm. Well, it's sunny occasionally.
Yeah. The way my flat sort of faces, we've got the light coming in, so we slowly get roasted throughout the day. So at the moment, I'm really, really warm in here.
Yeah,
it feels a little bit tropical.
Yeah, my studio faces south and it's it gets quite warm. In fact, that's why I got an air conditioner last year. I'm not actually using it yet, but I was determined to have air conditioning in the studio because it just, that's it, the whole side of the building faces south and just soaks it up, especially if you have a really sunny day and the sun arcs across and the whole, it's just like a heat
and soak. You've had the moth turned on for like an hour.
Yeah. It's not just the moth, it's a variety of synths and the PC and just everything humming away and discharging extra heat into the room, and it just becomes unbearable. When we've had when we get those sort of high days of sort of extreme summer, when it's sort of end of July, August, occasionally you get those sort of in the sort of early 30, sort of 32, 33 degrees, is that in the hundreds? Is that over? I don't know.
Bad at maths.
Fahrenheit. I'm just thinking my Fahrenheit.
I have no idea.
Centigrade.
Sorry, friends.
30 is roughly 110.
I think it's that. Is it that up that high?
I don't know. My time in America didn't instill that, reflex, Fahrenheit reflex in me.
Anyways, I mean, those really hot days, I mean, and we've had a number of years, I think, I don't know if it was 2018, 2017, there was a summer when we had a really intense summer, it wasn't last year, but it was, and the studio was almost unusable. You'd go in there and it was not a practical proposition unless you went in there, the sort of, even late at night, the level of humidity had built up to such a point, so I got sort of one of these portable on wheels kind of aircon units, and I got it in a stylish black to match.
Ooh,
to go with it.
Stealthy. Did they call it stealth black or shadow
nothing
black?
Like that, but it is a kind of piano gloss gloss.
Guys,
ebony, or if you want,
don't
call
you
it
get me started in names for colors, because this week has been all about that for me. Right, so I've got a few spots in my walls that obviously if I'm moving out I need to redo and these are the tiny
you've
got to
find
bits,
the right paint, haven't you?
Yeah. So it's a white, but it's not just your normal kind of white. It can be buttermilk. It can be magnolia. It can be ivory. It can be natural wicker. I have no idea. I went to B&Q about 10 times this week and I still haven't figured out the right shade of white.
So if you get a yellow or something and it's ocean sunset.
You know, there's a much easier way of doing that, Telma.
Just paint the whole thing then?
No. I mean, there's a much easier way of doing it. What you can do is if they've got a little chip of that paint, just get it, stick it on a piece of paper with a bit of sellotape. You take it along to one of these paint mixing places and they can scan it and they can make exactly that colour.
Where do they exist? Because if I take it to the regular place, they know less than me.
I can put you in touch with a commercial place that has got that facility and it's quite local to where you are now.
Oh my God, we're going to talk.
So, hang on, we got to painting walls from talking about the Digitac. So that's quite an
interesting
journey.
That was a bit of a segue, to be honest.
I did have a thought, actually, Pete. If you end up with a black box, you could use it like sort of a game controller, have your wires kind of trailing. You can just stand up and just control your rig from your hands. That'd be kind of cool.
Or you could, it's that small, you could
like
get kind of a wrist strap and have it like an oversized watch. Or something like that. No, I mean, I've been thinking about getting one anyway, so I will grab one and eventually we'll have some more Akai APC ones in stock at some stage, and I'll grab one of those.
Well, see, as we always say, you've been threatening these for quite a while.
Well, there's been a bit of an interlude, a sort of 3-month interlude when something happened and everything stopped for a time, and things got hard, so things getting hold of stuff was difficult.
Yeah.
But it seems to be, I'm not going to say normal, things are easing up.
Returning.
I'm sure everybody everywhere is experiencing some degree of this.
Yeah, well,
I was talking
looks
to one of my...
carry on,
I was
Tom,
just,
sorry to
interrupt. Just going to say, just talking to one of my mates in America yesterday, and she was saying that it's been about 3 weeks that everything's back to normal, even cafes, restaurants, bars, everything. But we're talking in a city that it hasn't been affected at all. Kansas City, it's quite in the center of the country, and apparently there was only less than 1,000 cases in the state.
Wow, that's pretty good.
I don't know. That's really good for. But anyway, I must be. I don't know if I'm lying. Maybe she's lying to me. But anyway, just thought I should drop that out.
No, it's like everywhere. There's certain parts of the UK that literally have had no cases whatsoever.
Yeah. I enjoyed
just the way it works. I mean, most of the transmission has been through the sort of transport conduits, so it follows those routes.
Looking at you, London.
Well, yeah. If you look at a UK map of contagion, it actually follows all the main kind of arteries of motorways and mainline sort of railway and air routes and so forth. You know, the modes of transport. So there's some outlying places that literally have had not a single case at all, literally untouched. But they still had to endure the whole lockdown and all that experience as well. So
we can rest assured that our whiskey will be safe because Isla has been fine.
Okay. I thought most of the distillers were sort of swerving away from supplying drink and turning to sort of hand sanitizer using their alcohol production.
Yeah, a lot of them have. As long as they've avoided any kind of cases
drinking.
As well.
Well, that's the big businesses to get into, hand sanitizer and masks.
Yeah, I know. I think BrewDog did a hand sanitizer.
Yeah, I think a lot of distillers actually, you know, because I think they had a lot of excess because of a lot of their exports suddenly dried up because more to do with logistics and, you know, sort of that type of thing rather than demand, because I'm sure the demand soared to a degree.
Yeah.
But it's just getting it. It's like everything. I mean, there's the massive demand in the music hardware. You know, the pent-up demand is phenomenal. I mean, I've spent the whole day, well, not the whole day, but a good proportion of the day, fielding phone calls from irate or semi-irate customers who want to know where their products are. But once you explain and reiterate, you know, there's been a problem and what the problem was, they tend to remember themselves and generally sort of row back from their initial sort of distress to as much as you can be.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I reckon it's time for our YouTube subscription recommendation, as we always seem to end our episodes with. I've got mine ready to go, and we're probably going to need to write a list of which ones we've recommended already so we don't keep repeating ourselves. Tom Stanton. Have I recommended him before, guys?
Right. Don't think so.
No? Cool. So this gentle chap is I think he sort of graduated from university with an engineering degree a couple of years ago, and he's been a drone, various remote control, aviation-y, electric bike building, DIY, trebuchet type channel. So he does a lot of DIY engineering type stuff, but he's really educational as well, so he'll explain a lot of physics. He's done some cool things like model the SpaceX rockets and make a model of one that can then land itself and all this kind of thing.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. He'll go through the build and his designs and his troubleshooting and how he made a remote-controlled Chinook helicopter, the two-propeller kind of military thing, or bicopter, whatever. Really, really interesting stuff. He's very English and does have a nice way of sort of narrating things. But yeah, Tom Stanton, about 380,000 subscribers on YouTube. Really, really interesting if you want a slightly more intellectual video rather than just the kind of lay back and let it wash over you. You can get thinking on these. And I think he's actually going to, if he keeps going the way he has been, I think he'll really, really will help sort of younger people who might be into drones already with some of the cheaper DJI stuff. Maybe get into the DIY world with 3D printing, all this. I think he's doing a good job. Tom Stanton.
Yeah, we need more people doing stuff, man. That's what matters, really. I think we need more hands-on, and that definitely inspires.
Yeah, part of the
whole generation.
The maker community, but on the engineering wing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You two chippity chaps, who's got one to go first?
I could go next. This week has been another week where I've dedicated myself to some studying, some interesting things I've been reading online in terms of musical theory and how to develop my harmonic sense. So I've been on this thing that I've been trying to play melodies. But trying to harmonize melodies with chords, so basically reharmonizing simple melodies. Let's put it that way.
Is this the bit where we need to make a little jingle for Music Theory with Telmo?
There we go.
There we go. We can sample that. Put it in next episode.
please. So one of the videos, sorry, one of the channels that I have been using to help me with that is a dude called Barry Green. It's not a very famous channel itself. It's got only 10.8k subscribers. It's got a little technical lessons where he not only goes through the through Ableton Live, and it teaches you how to transcribe just a musical idea into Sibelius from Ableton Live, which is really cool. It's actually very simple, but you know, it's worth these 20 minutes. It's like, duh, it was always been there. How come I've never used it, kind of thing. He also opened up this app for me, which I've never heard before, but I've been using it now. It's called Drum Genius, which is an app that you can download for your smartphone, and it's got drum tracks. So it's any sort of drum track that you can imagine, from any style, including some original tracks from classics, from James Brown to jazz classics to pop classics. So they isolate the drum tracks, allow you to pitch the drum tracks, allow you to use, you know, maybe change the tempo as well. And so he uses this app, connects it to his Ableton Live, and he does his own music this way, by using these this app in particular, Drum Genius. You need to pay to use it, but it's definitely worth it.
Pretty handy practice tool, though.
It is, yeah. Practice writing anything. I mean, you can do that. It's just super handy. It's like having a drummer in your pocket. So I totally recommend you guys checking that out. So yeah, there we go. There's my YouTube recommendation and my app of the day recommendation.
What was the channel called again?
Barry Green.
Nice one for your music theory needs. Pete, what do you got?
Right, well, normally I select something from my copious subscription list in YouTube, but I thought I'd do, it's still YouTube, but I thought I'd do something slightly different. I had the occasion, I don't know if you've experienced this, to actually sort of utilize YouTube, but someone else's stream, or actually a raw kind of YouTube as it presents itself. It's because I was looking at YouTube through a television. You know, a lot of TVs have got embedded YouTube apps now. And started finding all these channels, thinking, I didn't know that was even a thing. And it's, oh, yeah. So there's several I'm going to sort of mention over the next couple of weeks. But the sort of genre that I wanted to talk about this week, and the channel that I recommend, kind of feeds into what we were talking about, sort of craftsmen or highly skilled people, the sort of the therapeutic or sort of relaxing, watching someone who knows exactly what they're doing something very skilled. So one of the things that I didn't really know was a thing was watch customization, watch repair, and renovation. So there seems to be, once I started looking, there was a myriad of all these channels. So the one I've selected, there are others that you can choose, but it's called the Watch Repair Channel. So each episode is a particularly badly treated, disheveled timepiece of some make and period, and a gentleman dismantles it and renovates it completely and reassembles it. So nice. Typically they sort of you know, you start off with quite a sort of I mean, generally they sort of, sometimes they don't even function properly at all, but they you know, they're cracked glass, they're heavily tarnished, there's dirt and thoroughly, and the whole thing is completely dismantled to the smallest, right down to the jewels that the various things pivot on, and it's all generally filmed very well, and it's, I don't know if they're using macro photography to, or macro filming to do it, but you know, it's very close up stuff, and you see the how detailed and how intricate your sort of mechanical watches actually are. So
nice. Oh, I'm all about that, like, that's, really, that's precise, awesome mechanism thing. That sounds great.
Yeah. Absolutely. So this bit, as I said earlier, this one particular one that I've landed on, but there's others, is called the Watch Repair Channel.
Nice. I have come across something similar but much less interesting, which is Hot Wheels renovation.
Oh,
like people restoring vintage Hot Wheels cars, which is
I've actually strange. Seen though. They sort of sand down the bodies and they respray them, and you know, they bring them back. And they've got they seem to buy, I don't know if they're aftermarket, but they've got brand new wheels they can attach, because they I don't know what it was like when you were a kid, but if you sort of you sort of play with them too much, they're sort of the axles, I suppose you want to call them, the thin bit of wires, they tend to bend, and the wheels are all sort of buckled that type of thing. But they replace all those components, and they seem to be able to get hold of new windscreens and all sorts of bits. It's fascinating, these subcultures, these worlds that you didn't even know existed.
Definitely. It is kind of therapeutic as well. Definitely a good watch. Well, thank you very much for listening from Telmo, Pete and I. And we hope to... I always say we hope to see you in the next... We're not going to see you. I hope you'll be listening to us next week. That can be my little outro.
I will be seeing everyone.
Well, we'll be seeing each other, won't we? Anyway, enjoy, have a good week, and we'll be in the same place that you found us this time, just next week. Have a good one.